Hi, I'm Herb, and I'm in Beverly at the original Rainbow Cone, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above-ground audio magazine.
Thank you, Herb. Enjoy that delicious treat. Good morning and welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 822. And what we do here on this show is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. And we say good morning to our friend in the studio today, our engineer, Bob Ferguson, who is spinning the dials, making us sound great on the air. So good morning to Fergie. And again, thank you for tuning in to the show today. We've got a lot to do on the show. We will talk about some local music. We'll talk to a local musician who has now kind of transplanted himself to Charlotte, North Carolina. He's got some new music out. We'll talk to Asher George. Also, we will hear from our pal Steve Krakow, the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader, and we will get the story, this incredible story of Paul Cotton, who played with some really fantastic groups, and he's from Chicagoland, and what's it like going on set, the set of a locally produced indie film? We will find out. I did that recently, so we'll hear some sounds of what that sounds like all coming up on the show today. Hey, if you are ever downtown and maybe you're going to the beach, you're looking out on Lake Michigan, you'll notice that there are a few structures out on Lake Michigan. One of those structures is the Chicago Harbor Lighthouse, and it's a lighthouse. It still works. The light still works, at least. Apparently, the inside is a little bit abandoned. Could use some work. So there is this nonprofit that was created recently. I think it was recently, but they're called Friends of the Chicago Harbor Lighthouse. The website is savethelighthouse.org, and this organization's raising money to try to refurbish the Chicago Harbor Lighthouse. And I think that's really cool. I've never been inside it. I've been kind of up close to it. I've been out on some boats out there, and it's a pretty cool structure. This is interesting. Originally built in 1893, for the World's Columbian Exposition that was held in Chicago, and then it was moved to its current location in 1919. So for over 100 years, the Chicago Harbor Lighthouse has been in this location. And this, again, this organization is looking to restore it. This was put on the National Register of Historic Places in 1984, and I didn't know this, but in 2010, the city of Chicago officially took over ownership of the lighthouse from the GSA, the General Services Administration. That's an organization of the federal government. So it's really, I think, part of Chicago's history and still useful. Like I said, boats still use the lighthouse as a guidepost. Earlier this week, I saw this online. There were some journalists that were invited inside the lighthouse. I did not make the cut, but that's okay. But the pictures that they posted online were really incredible. So again, from the outside, if you're far away, oh yeah, it's a quaint little lighthouse. You get up to it, and then you start to see that the lighthouse needs some paint. It needs some work. It could use some TLC, and especially on the inside. From the pictures that I saw on the inside, lots of peeling paint. The doors are pretty old, so this could use some restoration, and that's the plan here. So the website, again, is called savethelighthouse.org, and they're looking to open this lighthouse up to the public, which I think would be really cool. So hopefully that happens, where the public can get access to it. I don't know how the public's going to get there unless they take a boat, but it would be pretty neat. It's also, it doesn't look like it's that big. I remember when I was on a boat over there a few years ago, it's not a terribly huge structure, so it's not like loads of people can get in there at once, but I think it would be pretty cool. And I do remember this, when the Chicago Reader, for their April Fool's edition, which I think they still do. This is, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. They put out a story, this was in print, that lighthouse was going to be turned into some fancy restaurant. A lot of people were like, wait, what? Is that really happening? It clearly did not happen, but yeah, it would be kind of cool maybe if they turned it into a restaurant, although I'm guessing it would be super high-end and not accessible to most people. So I think the route that they're going here is probably the best route. Open it up to people, get some people out there, and it's one heck of a view of the Chicago skyline. So the website, SaveTheLighthouse.org. We'll see where that goes. The people over at Friends of the Chicago Harbor Lighthouse are working hard to get some momentum in order to save that lighthouse, which I think is pretty darn cool. Well, the show, like I said, is cool, so stay tuned for that. If you're listening on land, in air, or on the sea, maybe you're by the lighthouse. Fantastic. Maybe in your travels around Chicago, you have seen the occasional film camera or lighting rig. And yeah, we've got a few big time shows that are being filmed here in the city, but there's also a thriving indie film scene. Recently, I visited the set on location of a film that is entirely produced here in Chicago. It's called Twain Canceled. And I went up to the north side of the city to get a bit of a behind the scenes look at what it's like to be on set. This is what it sounds like. So it's funny because I've been to this bar, the Holiday Club here at Irving and Sheridan, I don't know how many times. I used to live right over here. In my mind, it's never been a movie set, but that's what it is today. I'm here with Grant Troyer, the writer of the film that's being shot here and produced at the Holiday Club. Called Twain Canceled. Grant, thanks for having us here today. We're outside because inside they're shooting. So there's like movie magic going on. Give us the lowdown. What is happening here?
Sure. So we're pretty late into our shoot, and this is actually a pivotal day. We've got the story revolves around Mark Twain landing in modern day Chicago and becoming a stand-up comedian. So we're actually using the back room of the Holiday Club as our comedy set. So we've got a bunch of extras in the audience, and we've got Mark Twain and various other comedians up on stage, Mike, pretty much running through their bits. Some are scripted, some are improv, but this is a stand-up comedy day.
Glass.
We'll change it to be in the beginning guy, maybe it's.
Oh, yeah, right.
For practice, he made city council.
He made city council.
That was good practice.
Yep.
Mike awesome. Steven, WGN, John
Hi.
Silver, director.
Hey, how
nice
are
to
you?
Meet you?
Nice to see you.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, you bet. Hi, how are you?
I'm Hi, Mike. Very well. How are you? This is awesome. Mike. He's playing Mark Twain.
It's a beautiful name.
It sure is. I'm John Silver. I'm the director of the new indie film Twain Canceled.
Okay, so John, you were in there. I was watching you. You were in the zone. You were calling out action. You were looking at like three monitors. But the director, and I think maybe we all have an idea of what a director does on set, but I want to hear, what do you do? Like, what does the director do? Because what we know about directors, we see in films, right? Even now, you've got a headset going on. You've got like a, I don't know, you're mic'd up for something. What are you doing? What do you do?
Yeah, so this is a receiver so I can hear what's going on in the scene. So the audio that we're recording, it's matching what we're taking in camera. I can then make sure that the sound has clear audio. As a director, I kind of like the sports analogy that I'm a coach. I'm not on the field. I'm not playing. I'm not in the game. I am just giving the players whatever they need to inspire them to do the best they can. And at the end, I just want to win. I don't care how we get it.
So you are the coach, but you are managing a team here that has many moving parts to it. And, you know, I was talking to some folks who are behind the scenes here and people who are on camera, and you kind of, I mean, you have to worry about all of it. So there's the tech aspect, you know, you've got sound that was wired into your brain, but then you also have to, like, you know, as the viewer, right, like, what does this feel like? Because so much of that is that emotion when you watch a film or a show. How do you manage all that at once while thinking about the audio quality and all that?
Yeah. I think being a director is kind of like being the jack of all trades, that you do know a lot about everything, but you're kind of the master of none, right? So I am not an expert in any of the one things, so I have the ability to maybe step back and look at things broadly. So I'm not only looking at it from the viewer's perspective, but I have just enough to know this technical thing needs to be tweaked, this lighting, this sound, this camera thing needs to be adjusted slightly. So it's pretty much just being a manager of talented, talented creatives.
Sound, are we ready to roll?
Yes, we are.
Great.
Is it coming up?
All right.
Camera speed.
Sound speed.
EE speeds.
39 Alpha Beta Take 1. Common mark.
Okay, action. Now, in the first place, God made idiots. That was just some practice. The next thing he did is moved on to school boards. You know what I like about school boards? They're comprised of idiots who are right targets themselves for comedy.
Cool, okay. Let's do another one. This time, audience, actually do not laugh at all. Sorry, Mike.
It's okay. I think it feels right.
Is light coming up?
So when you are on set and you're looking at those monitors, I mean, you know what you want to get, right? But I feel like you sift through all this footage. How do you know when you've got this shot going on, how do you know, like, that's the one? That's the one. Like, what is that process? What just triggered in your mind that says, I think we got that?
Well, what triggers my mind to know that we got it is lucky that we're doing comedy, because if I chuckle or smile or laugh, then I know we got it. Mel Brooks once said, if it makes you laugh, it's funny. And I take that with me for every single video I do. If I am enjoying it, somewhere out there an audience is going to enjoy it too.
Cut.
I forgot to do this.
It's okay. Yeah, for this one, go ahead and grab the mic a little bit, Bella. And then you can be a little bit in shock when they start getting to the cancel and the meme thing, because it's...
Hey, I am Isabella Alonso, and I play Charlie in the movie. You know, how I describe the movie is it's kind of like a Mark Twain time-traveling buddy pick.
It
buddy
is.
Buddy comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I am the buddy to Mark Twain. You know, and it's really exciting because in the movie, Charlie is an aspiring comic. And that's kind of what brought me to Chicago, and that's kind of what is at the heart of the Chicago acting scene. You know, most of the commercial work we get here is because specifically production companies, ad agencies come to Chicago because they know that's where the improvisers are, that's where the comedians are. So just kind of across the country, we're known as this, like, hub of comedy. That's what brought me to Chicago.
And where are you from originally?
I'm from Manhattan, Kansas. We call it the Little Apple. It's very cute.
Well, before you finish that sentence, I'm like, Manhattan, what are you doing? Oh, okay, I get it now.
No, absolutely not. No, all the time people are like, oh, of course you're a New Yorker. I'm like, oh, no, no, no. Oh, no, no.
So that's really what brought you to Chicago, is that there is this, I don't know if it's more freedom, but like the improv scene here is that creativity is obviously thriving.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's in this film, too. I know there's a decent amount of improv that goes on.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the through line, I feel like. And for you, I mean, it brought you here. So that's incredible.
The other appeal of Chicago is, you know, people think of New York and L.A. as like these hubs of acting. But Chicago is that, but at the same time, it's a small town. So, like, you walk onto any, like, film set, you're like, holy, hey, how are you? You know, it's, or any audition room in the city, it's really cool.
It's the biggest small town I think there is.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Hi, I'm Charlie. You may recognize me from the bar where I just saw all of you, like, 5 seconds ago. Reminder to tip, because so far you guys are bad at it. okay, I'm going to tell you some jokes.
Well, this is really exciting. And when does this film come out?
We're anticipating in between the two big holidays, late November, early December is what we're anticipating. Everything goes according to plan. You'll see it between the two holidays.
Okay, great. Let's have everyone take a tight five. And then we're going to come back. And Mike, we have to just do a quick costume change for scene 62.
Yeah.
62 Alpha Beta coming up.
Let's talk new local music from the Project Walcott. That's W-A-L-C-O-T. The new EP that was released in June is called Songs for the Disenfranchised. And Asher George is the dude behind the Project Walcott. Go to Spotify, search for Walcott, W-A-L-C-O-T, and Asher George is with us here on Outside the Loop today. Asher, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So as I understand it, you are in North Carolina, but this album, this EP, I should say, Songs for the Disenfranchised, recorded here in Chicago, and some Chicago musicians on here, too.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I recorded it, actually... 7 years ago. It was recorded quite a while ago while I was going to DePaul University, and it was recorded in Ivy Lab Studios off of Clybourne at the time. So my a recording class I was taking was kind of spearheaded by an engineer there, Dan Steinman, and he offered to kind of record this EP for me when he heard some demos of my songs. So we kind of got together and got some session musicians, Chris Mayhew on the keys, Matt Thompson played upright bass, who also co-produced the album, and Chuck Lacey on the drums. And I played the guitar and sang.
So this was what we're hearing. This was actually done, you said, 7 years ago?
It was recorded summer of 2015.
Yeah. That's crazy. And I know I got to give a shout out to Chris Mayhew. I know Chris Mayhew. He's a fantastic dude, great piano keyboard player, and one of the nicest guys. I played with him a lot in the 2000s, and we would always joke, like, you know, we could say, "Hey, Chris, we set your house on fire." And he'd say, "That's okay. No problem. That's all right. Yeah, we slashed your tires." "Oh, okay. Well, thanks for letting me know." He's just a really nice guy, and he's a heck of a player. Heck of a player. But we love Chris Mayhew. So, all right, let's talk. We're talking about your band, your project, Walcott. So this is something, it's spelled, and I keep saying the way it's spelled, because it's, if you're from Chicago, maybe it's reminiscent of a street, but the project is called Walcott, is spelled W-A-L-C-O-T, not like the street, but it's pronounced the same.
Yeah, basically. Essentially, we kind of went through, me and a friend of mine, we kind of went through a list of dozens of ideas for what the name could be, and we were just coming out short, you know, trying to be too clever, then being too pretentious, then being a bit too avant-garde, and we just kind of looked out the street window and saw the street name, and it was Walcott, and the spelling was a bit like, I don't know, marbles in your mouth for a music name, and I just kind of chopped it up and respelt it phonetically, and it turned out that there's a town in England of the exact same spelling, which was strange, because somebody said that Walcott sounded like a UK band from the 60s, and there was actually a town with the same spelling, and then turns out there's a Vampire Weekend song with the same spelling but an extra T at the end, so just complete coincidence.
There it is. Well, let's talk about your music with this project, Walcott. I like it. It sounds, you know, pop rock, indie. I mean, how do you describe what it is? I know this was a few years ago now, but what is this project?
This project, this EP, is really just kind of meant to be the debut, just almost the appetizer, the precursor for a lot more music. It just took a lot longer to get it out there properly than I had ever anticipated, but it's essentially just serious music that has pop appeal. I don't know how else to put it. That has substance, but is palatable and doesn't become too I don't know, self-contained in the micro niches, micro genres that indie rock, indie pop, indie music often find themselves in today, where it becomes this kind of very one compartmentalized part of one music scene, but more harkens back to the days of, you know, late era Beatles, or even more modern, maybe like early Coldplay and stuff, alternative rock, like stuff that was musically inspired, Radiohead, but also that, you know, your aunt and uncle can get behind.
So you are out in Charlotte, North Carolina. You're playing out there. Any plans to bring this music there or back here live? Or what's that looking like on the horizon for you?
I just started tracking the next single this past weekend, which will be the kind of, like I said, this EP is kind of like the Training Wheels debut EP before the kind of fully realized full length. And I just started tracking the single for that. And when it comes to bringing it out live, I have been performing, you know, solo live here and there, putting some musicians together to potentially book some gigs. But, you know, it's a complicated ordeal doing all of this. But yeah, hopefully there'll be more and more bigger shows, especially heading towards the end of the year, while more stuff starts to come out.
So you have some experience in the Chicago music scene and now in the Charlotte music scene. Well, what's the comparison there? I mean, is it similar? Is one different from the other?
Chicago, yeah, that's a great question. Charlotte's music scene is very new. It's very molten, and it's currently under the radar. But the feeling out here, there's definitely a certain energy where it seems like in the next few years, it's very likely that I think Charlotte will start becoming a music destination town. And I know that's no small statement, but it's such a quickly growing medium-sized city that's kind of centered around banking and more corporate stuff that there's a huge vacancy for arts and culture. So it's a bit of a Wild West, and the community is very small and tight-knit. You can come here, it's like going out in the Wild West to go get gold, but musically and artistically, you can come out here and meet the who's who who's doing something and building a scene. You can become part of it in a way that in Chicago, you have to kind of try to fit into what's already going on. So a friend of mine kind of hearkened it to Motown after you know, the car industry propped up in Detroit. There's something analogous to that going on here.
Well, that's very exciting, and good luck with everything. The project is called Walcott, Walcott, and we can go to Spotify and stream the new EP. It's called Songs for the Disenfranchised, and it's exciting stuff. Asher George is the guy behind the project, Walcott. And Asher, good luck with everything, and keep doing what you're doing, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Rusty old door in your head, his answers keep away. The wonderful garden that hides behind there, with plants they wither and say, you're dreaming away, you're leaving the way you left me.
Occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. This strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Oh my goodness, yes. Connecting once again across town to the lair of an apartment of the one and only Mr. Steve Krakow, the author of the Secret History of Chicago Music. He is also known as Plastic Crime Wave, and we love him. And I'll tell you what we also love, this music coming from the great Paul Cotton, Norman Paul Cotton, but he goes by Paul Cotton. Steve, I totally love this music.
I knew you were a fellow country rock fan.
Yes.
Might not be what, you know, people associate with us the most, per se. You know, maybe we're more vocal about other forms of music we love or something.
Right.
But a big one, a huge one for me. And yeah, you know, I mean, he really, he deserves to be up there with all the greats.
Absolutely. And my guess is that most of us don't know who Paul Cotton is and his connection to Chicago. So, okay, let's just get this out there, and then we'll start with, you know, his most famous gig, probably, well, not probably, is, I would say, with the band Poco. He makes it to Poco, and you tell the story of how he gets there.
Yeah, and it's... It's got a lot to do with Chicago and Illinois. It was very, I mean, not only did he have sort of somewhat successful bands before Poco that he started here, it was a, you know, he really established himself in his career here in the wonderful state of Illinois.
Beautiful Illinois.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Paul Cotton and his rise. So he is born in 1943 in Alabama, but he's the oldest of five children, and eventually they move up to Illinois, and that's how he gets settled here.
Yeah, he moved here when he was like 16, and he, you know, he'd only been playing guitar a couple years, and I was very happy to sort of find the interview with him where he was like, he later moved to Key West. He's lived all over the place, I guess. But he was like, this is a town of about 5,000 people, just like the town I grew up in Illinois. You know, so I think he really considered himself an Illinois boy. You know,
yeah.
He said from a town of 5,000 people in Illinois. And that was Harvey, Illinois. Not too far from the city, obviously. I've actually had a few friends out there. But yeah, I think, you know, he had his real coming up here, and he started basically his first bands in good old Harvey, Illinois.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of those early bands. He attends Thornton Township High School, and he has an instrumental band called the Capitals, but as you say, not the same band that did the song Cool Jerk. That song rules, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
Love that song. In 1961, we're talking about the group the Mustwangs. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because his career more or less reads as a history of rock and roll if you look at it. You know,
yeah.
It's like he starts with a sort of R&B band, goes to like a surfy band, you know, and then he basically has what's called, you know, basically a garage band. He had a thing later on called the Gentries, not the same Gentries as Keep On Dancing. But yeah, it's just like you look at the evolution of it, and then he ends up in this garage band, the Roving Kind, who are basically quintessential Chicago garage. They're even on the Dunwich label, which like Shadows of Night and like, you know, all the forerunner sort of like garage bands here were on.
Yeah, the Roving Kind, oh man, they sound really good. And this band is kind of what really is the next step up for Paul Cotton, because this group, the Roving Kind, is going to give him a little bit of fame, and people are starting to pay attention to this guy.
Well, he hooked up with this cat, Cal David, who, if you talk to any old-timer Chicago musician, he will come up. He was a big deal, and he was in this band, The Exceptions, with a young Petey Cetera, who were a big deal too. Another one that I've met, you know, old timers are like, oh, The Exceptions, they were incredible. They could cover like a whole Curtis Mayfield album. You know, they were like they were, you know, that's where Peter Cetera cut his teeth on basically what they call blue-eyed soul, you know, in that group. So they were known for just being the best players, and they had, like, a really great following. So him coming over and playing with Paul, I think, you know, was kind of like a big deal. And yeah, and Rovenkind released stuff on pretty good labels. They had a residency at this place called Buster's, alternating bookies with this baby Huey, who was like a godlike figure to me. He was about like 350 pounds of like pure soul action. Very beloved, also in sort of Chicago music history, recorded for Curtis Mayfield's label. Mm-hmm. And they even got a spot on American Bandstand. So that kind of got him out to California and see like what the West Coast was like and stuff as well. Those were all pretty big opportunities.
All right. So the Rovenkind become Illinois Speed Press. Tell us what happens after they become Illinois Speed Press.
They were an interesting band because they sort of were on the forefront of combining like a little bit of country rock into things with like blues and sort of heavy acid rock that was coming in at the time. So they actually had a pretty unique sound. And I did read somewhere that Leonard Skinner loved them.
Wow.
Loved them. They could play the entire first Illinois Speed Press record, I read, note for note. So I would say that you could make an argument for Illinois Speed Press inventing Southern rock. Southern rock was created in Chicago, folks. I guess when Illinois Speed Press was kind of on their last legs, they gigged with Poco in California near Disneyland. This was a revelation to me. I didn't even know this until I did the deep dive. And I have to say, I've been liking a lot of Poco lately. So Poco's on their last legs. People went in and out of that band like, I mean, a lot of people don't realize it, but Poco sort of formed out of the ashes of Buffalo Springfield.
Right.
Like Neil Young left, Steve Stills left. Basically, what was left of Buffalo Springfield became Poco. And honestly, the first two records before Cotton Comes Aboard are fantastic. If you like Buffalo Springfield and you like that sort of West Coast, little bit of psychedelia, folk rock, all that kind of mixed together, they're great records. It's a very much a continuation of that sound. But then people are leaving left and right. Jim Messina, I think, had just left. So they're down to people. Illinois Speed Press is down people, and they're playing together. And I guess Richie Furere, who was in Buffalo Springfield and then Poco, he was taking notes. He was like, oh, here's a guy who's pretty good. He can play. He can sing. He's got songs. Notes were taken. Couple months later, he gets the call. Hey, why don't you come down and jam? You can just kind of see it all happening. And boom, he's in Poco. And he ended up being like a really important part of the band for like the next, you know, really almost 20 years.
Yeah, so Paul Cotton, he is going to keep playing into the 2000s. And he has his own band into the early aughts, as it were. And what ends up happening here?
Well, you know, I mean, he was getting up there a little bit by that time. He did kind of like, yeah, a lower key solo career, probably because nobody knows his damn name, in the 90s. And he just passed away a year ago. And I feel like it was sort of, you know, heart of pandemic, so much going on, so many celebrities dropping. Even Rusty Young, one of the other major guys in Poco, died a couple months before him, and you barely heard anything as well. So I was sort of deep diving on him, and I looked him up, and I'm like, oh wait, didn't he just pat boom? It was almost a year ago exactly. So I was like, you know, this is a good time to give the man a eulogy. But you know, he was 78 when he passed, and he was living in Oregon by that time.
Paul Cotton is who we're talking about today. He passed away July of 2021, age 78, and he is a great guitar player, hugely influential when it comes to music, but we probably don't know his name. But now you know the story, and you can check out the full story in The Chicago Reader, the secret history of Chicago music strip, is in the Reader. It's also online at chicagoreader.com. And Steve Krakow is the author of that strip. He also hand draws the person or band that he is profiling, so you can see his picture, his drawing of Paul Cotton. And Steve, I say thank you as always, sir. And let's just rock out to these tunes because they are so darn good.
I would say if you are Poco curious, go in for their fourth album. It's a good feeling to know from 1972. That's the second album that Cotton was aboard, and I think it's possibly his peak. Songwriting, playing, singing, kills it. Early times gone to rhyme. Somebody said it was a good time. To me, it was a long, long time. Just a long.
And that will do it. Outside the Loop show number 822 is wrapped up just for you. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer in the studio today. And be sure to check out OutsideTheLoopRadio.com or WGNRadio.com for the audio archives of this show. And since you're listening on the podcast here, fantastic. Make sure you subscribe to it so it gets delivered to your device each week. Have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.